I love it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, fellas.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
Mr. Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Yeah, that one still wins for sure.
I just love
that. That was a good one.
Good job.
I'm going to make it do what it do.
Yes, sir. There's no denying that one. I did it with that one. I give myself credit for it. That was way better than the new one.
You got it. No, all of them were good, man. It's all a work of art, man. We love it, man, as always, man. But, of course, welcome to Talking Sports with the 12 Men. We are wrapping up the month of March the 30th, on this Thursday, and we are officially ready to talk some sports. A lot of things happening, I mean, in the world, in Atlanta. Rob, you know, a road collapse in the 85, man, so we're going to be the topic of news tomorrow, man. We're fine, man. Just, it's craziness. But anyway,
yes.
It's good for us to take some time to, you know, no one was hurt, to just really talk some sports. And let's kick this party off as we always do. First and foremost, I am your host, Drake, Andre Peterson, joined by my fellow co-host. And let's check in with them because right now they're in my Final Four brackets, man. Those are my guys, man. Let's kick out to my boy, JQ. How you feeling this evening, sir?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. Just blessed not to have to been on there. And shout out and, you know, hopefully everybody got through there. I know it was some horrendous commute times out there, but I don't know what's going on with us and our highways here in Atlanta with the wrecks and the weather and everything else, but just a ridiculous day. So everybody out there, be safe for sure, you know, and give yourself some extra time for these next couple of weeks because it's going to be hard.
It's going to be hard. Yep. And let's kick it out with my other co-host, Mr. Robert Ford. He's all about LSU, all about Eaton, whatever you want to call it, man. How you doing, senior, sir?
Oh, yeah. You know, my kids was trained at a young age. They had this song, and it rang in the ear. LSU, Saints 2. LSU,
oh,
Saints.
My goodness. Oh, Lord have mercy.
So they've been singing that since they were really little. So
just
it's
indoctrinated.
It's all in their blood. I got a famous quote for y'all. That's what I'm going to start off the show with tonight. Y'all remember the name World Be Free?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Played in the NBA back in the 70s and 80s. You know, his name was originally Lloyd Free. Changed his name to World Be Free. World Be Free had one of the greatest basketball quotes of all time. He says, "I don't like taking the ball out of bounds because if I shoot it from there, it won't count."
Yeah, that dude's crazy. He's got a couple of them. Yeah, he's a nut. But you got to be able to change your name to World Be Free. So, I mean, that goes. I guess that goes to territory.
Is there a reason why you brought that quote up, Rob? Or I'm just curious here.
I don't know. I just thought that was a great basketball quote. I just had to bring it up.
Okay. I mean, we're going to talk about this, man.
I just got reminded of it recently.
Okay. All right. Famous basketball quotes. I love it. All right. Further ado, that's like I said, Rob, keep it coming, man. We'll have to figure out some way to have that incorporated in the show, man. I actually love that, man. So good job.
Yeah.
And without further ado, let's get this party started here. Let me, as always, throw out the numbers. If you want to reach out to your boys, call your show. The number is always 424-243-9519. I did text it to you fellows, too, to make sure that you guys have it in your call as well, man. 424-243-9519 is the number. Just for you. If you want to also follow us, we're on Twitter. If you go to the handle at the number 12, THMAN Sports, you are going to follow us there. And then last but not least, we're on Facebook. If you go to facebook.com/12ManSports, or if you type in Talking Sports with 12 Man, you will find this in that arena as well, too. So I know you guys, I got it memorized because I say it every week, man. So if you guys want to start saying the number, that's cool as well. Maybe you help memorize that, too, man. Because I say it every week, man. So that's why it's ingrained in my head. So I get it. All good. All right, gentlemen, let's kick this party off here. We're going to start off with the mock draft here for the second and third rounds here, and I didn't know where we're going to go. I know we're going to talk some NCAA a little later on in the round here. I was gonna be celebrating the victory for my Georgia Tech, but a whole other conversation. But anyway.
Oh, come on.
Let's talk about NIT. Dude, man. Actually, believe it or not, I was watching some history about that, and it said it was actually more important. It was actually more famous than the NCAA tournament back in the day. I got some interesting facts about
that.
Man,
that was 80 years ago, dude.
I'm just telling you, it's the history. I mean, I'm just saying, it was pretty big, you know. Ironically, I'm telling you, hold on.
Were you living 80 years ago?
Can I just say something really quickly? There is a tie with one of the teams in the tournament that goes back to NIT, which is why I thought it was pretty interesting. So it's not because I'm trying to like call it out, but it was some interesting facts about that. And there's a school that's in there now that ties back to that too. So we'll talk about that later on. So since y'all trying to like beat me down, I'm trying to bring some real facts here. But anyway,
you got that trivia nugget from Monday.
All the time.
I'm sorry, Dre. Go ahead, bro.
You having fun? You having fun? I was just watching the tournament, and they really brought some interesting facts. So they're like, hey, the history of it was how it was you know, bigger than the NCAA at the time. Yeah, that was such a long time ago, but it was interesting facts. But all good. All right, let's jump into this. Let's talk about the second and third rounds of the NFL here. Kick it off, Rob.
Well, I thought we'd do something a little different. I know in most of our mock draft coverage, we've been talking about the first round draft, and I think at this point, I think we have a good idea. We may not know exactly where they're going to get picked, but we have a good idea about where a lot of the guys or who the first-round draft picks are. We may just not know exactly the number where they're going to get picked. So I wanted to just talk about some big names in the second and third round to look out for, because obviously when teams draft second and third-round picks, they expect these guys to be starters as well, maybe not instant starters, but second and third round picks are expected to be starters on your football team at some point. So just a little bit here. Some second round guys I want to feature here. Evan Engram, tight end for Ole Miss, I think could be a nice find for a team. I have him going 36 to the Chicago Bears. Also Charles Harris, defensive end, outside linebacker, pass rusher from Missouri. Have him going 37 to the Rams. T.J. Watt. You all know J.J. Watt's younger brother from Wisconsin, outside linebacker. Have him going 38 to the Los Angeles Rams. Tre'Davious White, cornerback from LSU. Have him going 40 to Carolina this time. Carl Lawson, edge rusher from Auburn. Have him going 44 to Buffalo. Juju Smith-Schuster, wide receiver from USC.
Juju on that beat.
Have him going 45.
Sorry, my bad.
To Arizona. Alvin Kamara, running back, Tennessee. Have him going 47 to Baltimore. Sidney Jones, a guy who's dropping a little bit because of injury, cornerback from Washington. Have him going 53 to Detroit. A guy who Andre's pretty high on, including myself, Budda Baker, safety from Washington. Have him going 52 to Cleveland. A couple of cornerbacks from Florida who at one point was considered first-round picks. Quincy Wilson, cornerback from Florida, going to Miami at 54. You look at cornerback Tez Tabor from Florida, having gone 62 to Pittsburgh. Also, the shocker of the second round, right now I have Joe Mixon, who's really a first-round talent. I have him going 56 overall to the Oakland Raiders. Getting Mixon ready for Viva Las Wages. The team, as we all know, is moving to Viva Las Wages here in another year or two. So Joe Mixon, I have Oakland, is that team taking the chance on him in the second round? Obviously, we know that they lost Latavius Murray to the Minnesota Vikings. So I have them as that team taking a chance on him. Rockwan McMillan, I have him going 61 to Green Bay.
Okay.
Your Atlanta Falcons, 63, Jordan Willis, defensive end of Kansas State, which I think would be a nice pick. Wouldn't want to see him go there at 63. Let's look at some third-round guys. David Webb, quarterback from Cal, have him going 65 to Cleveland. Desmond King, a versatile guy, safety cornerback from Iowa, 67. I think he has the potential to be a Malcolm Jenkins-type player. Have him going 67 to Chicago. Tyus Bowser, another sleeper, defensive end from Houston, going 68 to Jacksonville. Ryan Anderson, outside linebacker from Alabama, one of Nick Saban's guys, New England at 72. Brad Kaya, quarterback from Miami, 75 to Buffalo. Ethan Posick, center from LSU, 77 to Arizona. Duke Riley, another LSU guy, outside linebacker, going 79 to Minnesota. Jake Butt, tight end from Jake Hughes' favorite school, Michigan. Going 87 to the New York Giants. With a name like Jake Butt, it just seems like it just fits with the New York Giants. So I have him going 87 there. And those are, for the most part, most of the big-name guys. Malachi Dupree, wide receiver from LSU, have him going 104 to Kansas City. And Samardzija Perine, running back from Oklahoma, have him going 106 to Seattle. So I obviously just wanted to feature on some of the big names in the second and third round. Because, once again, these are guys that teams will be looking for to, at some point in the next couple of years, be a starter and contributor to their football teams.
Any thoughts on that, JQ?
No, the only thing about it is I think that maybe an Ingram and a Watt, due to their production and to their combines, I think they may sneak into that back end of the first round maybe and knock somebody else out of there. Mixon, you know he's going to Cincinnati. They're going to go Reuben Foster and Mixon because that's what we do. We get anybody that fights somebody, we go for them. You know that's happening. So I mean, don't resist it. You know it's going to happen. But I mean, all the other ones you talk about, those are good slots. And those are good fits for those guys to go there. I don't really have a whole lot to add on to it at this point. It's going to be interesting. No, I just hope nobody does anything crazy unless smoking the weed and the gas mask kind of come out. You know, up until the draft. But I'm really interested to see, you know, for me, it's Mixon. I make fun of it. I can see the Bengals doing that. They have other needs, but I think they are to the point where they don't want to necessarily tip their hand, or they just want to three down back to where they don't have to interchange Geo and Jeremy Hill. You know, the both of them are good in their own right. They may just want somebody they can leave on the field. So I honestly think Mixon may be in play for them there. But I'm interested to see, you know, what GM and what team takes that leap on Mixon, because you almost have to have a PR plan in place to combat what you're going to deal with from all the rights groups that come out and all the backlash that you get for taking Mixon that high. You know, you may get away with it if it's like fifth, sixth round, you're going to get a little bit of flack. But if you take him in the second round, I've heard he's rising that fast, because without those incidents, he might be a first round back. He's just that good. But he's had all these problems that have been, you know, well chronicled in videos. Who's going to take that leap of faith? And I just want to see what kind of strategy they employ to combat the negative publicity they're going to get for a draft and Mixon that high if he indeed goes in the second round.
Yeah, well, I don't know about strategy. We'll see about that, man.
You have to. I think you have to have.
Yeah, you do have to have.
If you go into it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you draft him, you know you're the first. If you draft Mixon in the second round, your first press conference where, you know, all of our teams bring all the draft picks up and they hold up their jerseys, and you know it's two or three of them there on the dais. The first five, maybe 10 questions, and that's not even being, you know, with hyperbole, is going to be about to Mixon, or about, do you feel any backlash? Do you have any problems thinking about what he's going to do in the future? What are your fans going to think? What are your women fans going to think? What would you tell your daughter? All those kind of things are going to come up immediately. You're almost not even going to know about the other guys that are up there. It's going to be about the GM and about Mixon, and it's going to go to them with all the initial questions. And if you don't have a plan, you're going to look real crazy and stupid, and you're going to be a viral sensation because they're going to talk bad about you. That's what I'm saying. I don't think you can do that without a plan. If you don't, then you're probably one of those GMs that was already on the line of, you know, getting ready to be fired anyway.
The only team that can possibly pull it off is be like a Patriots or something like that, that can pull off something to that effect, you know? Mm-hmm. Someone that has a strong enough locker room to kind of put up with that, oh, well, they're taking an opportunity on the guy, you know. But still, you know, that's the only team I think right now that can pull something like that off, man. So, good job. Who did you have the Falcons take in the second round, Rob? Who did you have the Falcons taking again? I want to make sure I heard that correctly.
I had the Falcons in the second round taking Jordan Willis, defensive end of Kansas State. And third round, I had the Falcons taking Antonio Garcia, offensive tackle from Troy.
Okay. All right. Interesting. All right. I'll come back around that. All right. Good stuff, man. We'll see how that plays out, as we always do. All right, 30 minutes here. Let's talk about the 49ers here. A lot of love for our California fans. And the question that is posed, why new 49ers coach Kyle Shanahan does not want Colin Kaepernick? So kick it off, Rob. Is this what's up with that?
Well, it's a different philosophy, obviously. You know, Chip Kelly and also Jim Harbaugh, his previous head coach that, you know, led them to the Super Bowl. You know, their offensive philosophies are definitely very different and probably suited Kaepernick's game a little bit more, you know, being able to run the spread with Harbaugh and being able to run that fast break offense with Chip Kelly probably suited his skills a little bit more. Kyle Shanahan wants to run a variation of the West Coast offense, which probably does not suit Kaepernick's style or Kaepernick's game. And so that's, in a nutshell, that's what it comes down to. Shanahan wants to run a different style of offense, and Kaepernick's skill set is not suited for Shanahan's offense.
Your thoughts, JQ?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's pretty much it in a nutshell. You know, if you look at Shanahan and what he's done, he's not – he doesn't want that, you know, kind of slash kind of runner where, you know, when it breaks down, just take off. He wants you to sit there and go through the progressions, like you said, in that modified West Coast offense. And if you think about it, I mean, he had a hard time gelling with Matt Ryan, who is, if we're being honest, leaps and bounds better, you know, pocket quarterback than Colin Kaepernick is. So, and it took them, you know, a couple of years to kind of get on the same page. And that's with somebody who is a, you know, for the most part, year in, year out, kind of Pro Bowl style quarterback, I mean, a Super Bowl quarterback as well, to join Kaepernick in that conversation, but just totally different kind of philosophy and more of a pro-style, traditional pocket passer. And it took them a period of getting going. And I think the learning curve for Kaepernick and what he is able to do is so far removed from what Shanahan wants to do that I just don't think he's a viable option to lead lead that offense in the way that he wants it to be led. So you can go ahead and close the door on that and any possible reunion for that. I just don't see that happening at all. And to all the points that Rob just made, it's just that's not what is going to suit his skill set best. And honestly, I'm looking around. I don't really know if there's a whole lot of places where it does suit him, because he needs more of that read option, that, you know, that style that he and RG3 ran when they first came in the league, where they kind of brought that from college to the NFL, and the NFL hadn't seen it before, but then the NFL caught up to it, and they didn't have a fallback plan. That's why you see those two quarterbacks kind of struggling, because they haven't really adapted. So I'm not quite sure where Kaepernick goes, but he's definitely not San Francisco.
Yeah, and I think it could be a situation, too, fellas, where, you know, it's probably good for him to make a fresh start. So, in a surprising fashion, I mean, Kyle Shanahan does enjoy mobile quarterbacks. So, you know, Kyle is mobile, but like we talk about, there's a couple of reads that have to be made from that particular offense, you know, turning his back, you know. So, like you said earlier, Rob, about the spread option and some of that, certain things that may not fit his certain skill set. But, you know, at this juncture, I think it's kind of good for everyone to make a clean start. And I definitely think his confidence is definitely affected, kind of like a Brock Osweiler. It's good for him to start fresh as well, wherever he's going to end up at. But, you know, that's probably why I think it's kind of good for Kyle to say, let's kind of start fresh. I'm a new coach. It's a new era. Let's put that behind us and let's kind of start new. So that's kind of my thoughts on that particular situation as well, too. And I think you mentioned it earlier. Will he find a job? You know, not sure. I mean, I do think he is talented. Now, granted, I just think he needs a lot of confidence. So, you know, again, I don't know why I keep throwing the Patriots out there as a wasteland, but if you find a right person, kind of mold him or get a good quarterback quarterback coach and a guru, maybe he can turn it around too. So you want to wrap that up too, Rob, your thoughts about that too as well?
Yeah, my thoughts on that is I know some of this has to do with some of his politics off the field. I mean, let's just be real here. NFL teams don't want to admit it, but a lot of it has to do with his politics off the field. Look at some of the guys that's being signed. Josh McCown is going to his 15th team in his NFL career. Now, I know I'm exaggerating there a little bit, but this guy's been all over the league.
It's cold.
His journeyman. I mean, is he better than Colin Kaepernick? Let's be real.
No.
No, he isn't.
No, no, no.
The Saints just signed Chase Daniels.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Is he better than Colin Kaepernick?
No, not at all.
So, I mean, look all around the league.
Brian Hoyer. Going to
Brian Hoyer. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
Colin Kaepernick was 17th in the NFC. Oh, I'm sorry, in the NFL in passer rating last year. Is that Pro Bowl numbers? No. But there's 32 teams in the NFL. Each team carries at least two quarterbacks, so that's 64 jobs. And he should have one of those 64 jobs, in my opinion, hands down. I mean, he was 17th in the league in passer rating. So he probably, if you look at those statistics, he can possibly still be a starter for some team. And so obviously I think politics has a lot to do with this. And you look at some of the guys that's getting contracts in the NFL, you cannot tell me that he's not better than some of these quarterbacks that's getting contracts. So that's my two cents in it. I think at some point some team is going to give him, or maybe a team is waiting for after the draft to see what happens. But I think at some point some team is going to give him a chance. I just don't. It's just hard to pinpoint what team at this moment.
Into the other topic as well, and that people don't discuss it. You got those 32 teams, and you look at a lot of that owner set. A lot of these, and you know, I'm not trying to be flip, but you got a lot of older, rich white dudes running these teams. And if you took a straw poll, of which way they lean in terms of Democratic and Republican, I would think you would, what number do you think is maybe 75%, probably even higher than that, that lean Republican, and we have a Republican president that has been constantly, you know, criticizing Kaepernick, has since that he took his stance up until now. So if they lean that way and you've got their president out there who's putting anybody and everybody on blast on Twitter, you know, whenever he feels like, they're kind of like, you know, I'm going with him. I'm not going to be the guy to sign him, like a the owner for the Browns. You know, that's somebody with Hugh Jackson. I think that, you know, if you took a chance on RG3, why would you not necessarily take a chance on Colin Kaepernick? At least bring him in camp at a decent salary and see what could happen. But you got your owner who's strong Republican leaning and going with our president who's criticized him. That guy's not going to bring him in. He's not going to bring him in because of the politics of it. Regardless, you know, that dude, Kaepernick, would have to be just a stud in order for him to turn his nose like, well, you know, I don't like his politics, but you know what, that dude is a pro bowler and I just got to have him on my team. He's not fair in terms of play on the field. So when he's in that middle ground, like you said, 17th, and you got them not wanting to go against the grain, so to speak, with their politics, they're not going to bring him in. And I think what you say, Rob, is absolutely that. He's not doing enough to make them sway from that political opinion on there and that distraction and that baggage as they view it, because his play on the field is not top five, top 10 quarterback play. If he's top five, top 10 quarterback play, yeah, he's in there. But at 17th, with what he's doing and the way they have their leanings, you know, outside of football, that's why he's still sitting there on the street from my standpoint.
Yeah, I know he's come out and said he will stand for the national anthem this coming season. I don't know if that's a ploy to get a job, but, you know, let's move on, people. Let's move on. He deserves one of these 64 quarterback jobs in the league.
Yeah.
And there'll be a few teams that keep three quarterbacks, so there's going to be more than 64 jobs.
But you know what? Just to put a bow on it, he can't ask for $8, $9 million a year. And I've heard reports that's what he's asking for. If he's asking for that, he's not going to have a job.
He doesn't deserve that.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think he's asking for that. So that's another wrinkle to the discussion that, you know, he's also got to bring his salary demands in line with, I'm trying to come in as a second quarterback, prove my worth, and then elevate into that first, you know, to that starter quarterback role. And then at that point, we can renegotiate what I'm worth in terms of my contract when I prove it to you on the field, right? But he can't come in with where he is as a middle quarterback with demanding starting quarterback money with the politics that he's put out there that opposes a lot of the ownership's politics. So he's in a real precarious situation right now. And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out as we move closer to the season.
Good call. Good call. All right, let's talk about somebody in our division, NFC South, Cam Newton. The question is, will he bounce back this season? And you are on the hot seat, JQ. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I don't know. You know, like I said, with our president now, I think I read a report where he said he identified as part Mexican or something crazy that he said, and I was like, come on, Cam, dude, you're a brother. They're going to look at you as a brother. You stop. Don't pull the Tiger Woods on us. That's who you are. Just embrace it and go with it. I don't know what that's about. But I worry if he's going to bounce back. I don't know if Cam was in the right headspace, and I don't think he's been in the right headspace since that Super Bowl loss to Denver. And it's kind of spiraled down. And I'm looking at what he's had happening, and if I'm paying him that kind of money and we're sitting here basically in April and you're just having the surgery, you know, you got to have that surgery early on. I know people don't like to go under the knife, but it's so much harder to say I'm going to heal holistically outside of surgery and be ready and be the guy that I was before. You're almost at the point with the pounding that he's taken, especially, that he has to go ahead and have that surgery and get it done and show that, hey, I'm trying to get back to it. It's kind of like he's milling around. He's doing all these other things. He's trying to build his brand. And it's like, oh, well, you know, it seems like I'm trying to get out of not necessarily having to go to training camp. A lot of guys, these guys do that. So when you do that, coming off of a subpar season and you injure it and now you got to get it back and you got to get your timing back with your wide receivers, you got to have that timing. He can't throw to him. And I don't care how much film you do and how much you talk to a wide receiver, those reps of knowing where they like the ball coming out of a, you know, a five-step drop, you know, on a dig route, on a double move, on a go route, you know, or coming across the middle on a shallow cross, all those things can only be established through practice and repetition. And he can't do that for the next 4 months. So I have issues with him being able to bounce back this year all the way. He may have a stronger second half as he gets healthy and he gets that rapport back with his receivers. But that first half of the season, I don't think it's really going to be strong. That's just me. I mean, I would like to be wrong somewhat, you know, because I like the Falcons to do well. And in order for them to do well, the Panthers can't do well. But I can't see him just jumping out in July, coming off of, you know, shoulder surgery and getting the rapport back in the time for a, you know, basically a Labor Day or a week after Labor Day start to the NFL and just setting the world on fire. And you're talking about we're going to limit his running. So if I limit his running, I take away one of the things he does best to keep him healthy. But then I'm asking him to make up for it with his pocket presence. But he's got a shoulder he's still rehabbing, and he still doesn't have the timing down with his receivers. I don't know if you can do all those things and have it ready for week one.
Dang, JQ.
I'm just saying.
Going in. Rob, what do you have to add to that? Really? Soapbox. Go ahead, Rob. Here's on you, man.
Sorry.
Well, I think you know, JQ makes a ton of great points there, and I totally agree. And I think there's going to have to be there's still a few things that needs to take place in order for him to have a successful season next year. Obviously, you lose your deep threat in Ted Ginn Jr. to the Saints, so that hurts you in one aspect. You don't have a viable running back at this time. And 2 years ago when they went to the Super Bowl, the offensive line was extremely strong up the middle. Their guards were top-notch and their centers were top-notch. Their offensive tackles, so they were weak on the edge on the offensive line, and that's what Denver exposed them on the Super Bowl. They were able to get by with it most of the season. And then last year what happened, obviously, is you didn't have a strong running game behind them. And the offensive line, where they were strong, they had injuries. Obviously, they just signed Khalil to come in and play left tackle, and that could possibly help them on the offensive line. Obviously, they still got to get back healthy in the interior offensive line. So there's three things that need to happen. Their offensive line has got to be a lot better than it was last year. They need a legitimate running back, somebody that's young. I think just about all their running backs are 30 and over, and Jonathan Stewart and injury-prone. So he needs a back that can kind of come in and deal with Zeke Elliott did last year. So they need that Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott kind of combination with a solid offensive line like Dallas Cowboy has. So they need for a lot of those kind of – and that's asking a lot. I mean, can you get someone to come in, a deep threat to come in and replace Ted Ginn Jr.? Can your offensive line be shored up? And can you get an elite running back to come in there and help you? So, I mean, that's three things that needs to happen. And the odds of all three of those things happening are probably slim. And the odds of them fixing one to two of those is possible, but the odds of them fixing all three of those, I think, is almost impossible. So I think it's going to be very hard for him to have the season he had 2 years ago without those things in place.
Yep.
I was waiting for you to say something else with that, too. Good call. All right. Yeah. Let's talk about this a little bit more here. Let's keep moving here. And we talked about Cam, and I agree with you that definitely that, like you said, JQ, that super, he never really recovered from the Super Bowl. And I still think there's a couple of pieces that they weren't strong as they were defensively as well, too. They drafted a lot of rookies, and hopefully they're expecting them to kind of play quickly, but they lost a lot. So we'll see, man. Like I said, I don't care as much because they're in my rival division. But it is an interesting story to see why he's having everything right now. He's got to catch up a lot to keep things going. Word on the street, guys, and I don't know if you heard about this too, Rob. is that the Panthers are definitely trying to trade up to number two to jump to get Leonard Fournette, man. So that's kind of what I'm hearing. I don't know if you heard about that, even you, JQ. This is something my father was telling me in California, because he's like, I don't think the coordinator should be trying to trade picks. I'm like, where is this coming from? So, you know, they want to jump ahead of the Jaguars, because I think the Jaguars are also high on Leonard Fournette, because that's one missing piece they feel that he can add to that, to the offense. So I think it's a great call, too. So keep an eye on that as well, too, man, because, you know, if that happens,
So, right now, that's why I have Leonard Fournette going. I am going number four to Jacksonville, so that's that could be a. And I know Carolina would love to have Fournette too, but watch the you know Dalvin Cook in this whole process too. I know there's some NFL teams that value him over Fournette because of his versatility, and with Dalvin Cook is probably a little bit more versatile as far as catching the ball out of the backfield, but as far as pure running back running upfield. Obviously, Fournette would be the best guy at that, but there's some NFL teams don't view him as a third down or a three down back. And so there's some teams I do know that value Cook a little bit more. But I still, at the moment, I have Fournette going number four to Jacksonville. But
so
I think Fournette would be perfect for what I think Fournette would be perfect for what the kind of style of offense that Carolina likes to run.
Agree. But let me ask you a quick question. We talked about it earlier, and I'm sorry, Dre, I just want to ask it to both of you, honestly. Do you think Carolina would be better served to wait and do what they need to do and stay where they are in the first round and then try to maybe move up in the second round or stay where they are in the second round and just take a Joe Mixon? Because I think Mixon could fit what Carolina wants to do as well. And I think they have a strong locker room as well with Rivera and whatnot and the Luke Kuechly and the Thomas Davis, where they won't take that nonsense and they can keep him in line. Is that not a better fallback plan as opposed to the draft capital it would take for you to move up to get a Fournette from – where they are to go to number two.
And I'll tell you another name to watch for Carolina in the second round is Alvin Kamara from Tennessee, who might even be a little bit better fit than Mixon for him. Mixon has the versatility that we just talked about, similar to what Dalvin Cook has. And but Calvin Kamara is another workhorse kind of back, which might be a little bit better fit for Carolina. I mean, right now I have Kamara going to Baltimore in the second round, which would be after Carolina. But he's another guy to watch that I do know Carolina would consider if they don't get the running back in the first round. So that's another name to look for, too.
That's a good call.
Excellent call. Yeah, and like I said, I think that, so like you said, JQ, too, that, I'm kind of curious about this, too, because I like where Rob's going with the Dalvin Cook thing. I like where some things. So I don't know if Mixon is going to be – that's going to be a lot to deal with if they go that high with him too. But that's an intriguing move too, man. So, yeah, they can make an impact.
Right now I have Cook going to Cleveland at 12.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying there's a couple guys that if something happens, if Jacksonville stays where they are, if they don't move up, and, you know, like you said, something happens to Fournette, I think Cook could you know, possibly go to, you know, number eight to Carolina. But Mixon is probably – they're probably – you know, hitting the table about that too as well. All right, well, let's talk about your boy. Rob trying to torture me. Tom Brady, will he break Steve DeBerg's record? And you know, obviously, he wants to continue to play till like I think I heard what 6 or 7 more years. I think he's 40 right now, so he's trying to play for. I think does Steve DeBerg like
he'll be 40
like 44 whenever he is. But
Steve DeBerg has a record of
44
years of age and 279 days when he started a game for the Falcons. And so, 44 years and 279 days old. Now, Vinny Testaverde also started a game at 44. Warren Moon also started a game at 44. Mm-hmm. Now, George Blanda played until he was 48, but he was a kicker more so at that age. And a backup quarterback, his last game as a starting QB was 41. And so Brady would have to be a starting QB some point in 2022 in order to break Steve DeBerg's record. So I guess the question is, will he be a starting quarterback in 2022 to break Steve DeBerg's record?
I can't bank on saying somebody's going to be a starting quarterback at 44 years old. And Brady will be 40 because I hate that dude, but I think he's born like 2 days after me, the same year. So we'll both be turning 40 within the same week, to be quite honest with you. That's how I know he'll be 40. But, you know, that's hard to look to project that far out because, like everybody says, Father Time, I am. Father Time is undefeated. And to say 4 years from now he'll still be an elite-level quarterback to lead a team, somebody will want him to that level. You know, I don't put it past him because we've talked ad nauseum about his work ethic and the way he takes care of his body and his eating and training regimens. But, you know, right now, 4 years from now, to say somebody that's getting ready to be 40 is going to be a starting-level quarterback in this NFL, in this day and age, in a passing league, we just turn around and hand the ball off and you try to mask them. I just can't say that. It could happen, but, I'm at least, 30-70 against. You know, I'll give him 30% chance, but I'm going to say 70% that he won't.
Right. Okay. All right. Good deal. Yes, I'm saying that right. Okay, cool.
Yeah, those are all valid points. I totally agree. I think it would be hard to predict at this stage. I will say this, though, as you're starting to see, though, quarterbacks are playing a lot longer for the most part. And, I think part of the reason is the NFL has put skirts on them, and they're protecting them. They're protecting them a lot. And they're not going to take the pounding and things of that nature as they did in the past. And we know in practice they're wearing red jerseys and things like that. You can't touch the quarterback. And so that's a good thing. I mean, obviously, even for my team, the Saints, Drew Brees is knocking on 40, and he's still playing at a high level. So, I guess I can thank the NFL for that, too, for putting the skirt on him and, for
You're
helping
hilarious.
Him play a long time, too. And it's possible, but I still think it's still very hard to predict that, yes, he will be. So I'm more along the lines of giving him to 42 or 43 at this stage. It's hard for me to say he'll be playing at 44.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think he's playing because that dude is like he wants to be the greatest ever. I mean, he just wants to keep separating himself, man. So that joke will keep playing until you, break his leg or something, man. I don't know, but we talked about Rob, putting skirts on the quarterback and everything like that, but you do have to protect players, and if something does happen to your quarterback, as you mentioned, it's going to be tough, man. So I'm not saying you got to totally make it so that you can't touch him or whatever, but, yeah, it is good to protect certain players for sure, man. But, if something happens in the
It's good for the
game,
NFL
game,
obviously.
It is.
Yeah.
It is, but I'm saying, I'm with you. I mean, like I said, I don't think you have to be put total skirts on them, but, they can get hit, obviously, but you do want to protect them and, illegal hits and little things like that, too, man. That's all I'm saying. There's got to be a balance. Balance is always key in all situations. So, it is what it is. So, yeah, that's the case. Let's talk about Mr. Joe Flacco. Will he win another Super Bowl as starting QB? This is tough. Kick it off, JQ. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I was going to say is –
Wait, this is going to be a biased answer right here.
I'm waiting to hear this.
It's going to be a for real answer.
Okay.
But, Ray Lewis and Ed Reed are not walking through that door. So, I think Joe Flacco caught fire, and got that big contract situation. In that postseason run, he was phenomenal, and I won't take anything away from him. Everybody knows I'm a Bengals fan, and of course, I don't like the Ravens because they're in my division. But if I'm looking at Joe Flacco and watching games, as a Bengals fan through the perspective of the AFC North, I don't see him taking that step to where you put the team on Joe Flacco's back and he becomes a Drew Brees, a Matt Ryan, a Tom Brady, where you can just kind of put interchangeable parts around it, but as long as you have him, then he's fantastic. So I don't think so. I think he's one of those quarterbacks that has to have a very strong defense, a good run game, and be able to basically be, quote-unquote, a game manager. And if he gets hot for a couple games and puts you over the top, that's all well and good, but I don't know if you can sit back and game plan and say, Joe Flacco is going to take that step and be a top five quarterback. I don't think any of us look at him as a top five, not even really a top 10 quarterback, to where you just put a team on his back and he just takes them to a Super Bowl and they win. He's got to have, and every team has to have a decent defense. Don't get me wrong, but I think he has to have a phenomenal defense to where you limit his exposure and what you ask him to do week in and week out to get to that kind of level of being a Super Bowl winner.
Rob?
I mean, I kid with JQ, but I totally agree with him. I don't see Joe Flacco being that quarterback to carry a team. I mean, he's going to have all the pieces in place in order for him to take another team to the Super Bowl. And so I just don't see that happening. for the remainder of his career. You know, as Rick Pitino once said, Kevin McHale is not walking through that door, and JQ also said it with Ed Reed and Ray Lewis. They're not walking through that door. And I just don't see it. Can they be a contending team, a playoff team? Absolutely, but I just don't see them having another opportunity to put that kind of team together again for him to lead a team to the Super Bowl.
Right, thank you, Rob. So I was being objective. I mean, if he was that guy, I would say he was that guy. I just don't think he is.
Hey, but, you know, we got to have a little fun.
Oh, no, I know.
We got about 5 minutes here. I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about fantasy shout-outs because both of our co-hosts are in the midst of an intense battle. I want to talk about that. But I also, really quickly, if we can kind of switch this in here, I want to talk about two things about the rule changes. And I want to talk about we talked about this last week a little bit, how we knew that the Raiders were going to go to Las Vegas. And my two cents really quickly, I want to say that I think it's a great move, as Rob mentioned, as far as seeing your team play in Vegas, seeing, you know, the Pro Bowls and, you know, Super Bowl that's going to eventually obviously happen in Vegas. The thing that I was upset about was it's the Raiders. And I think, you know, and I say that because the Raiders did everything right. The fan base, there was no blackouts. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a storied franchise. So I'm kind of upset that it's the Raiders. How come it could be something like the Jaguars or something like that, I guess is the question, because, you know, certain teams, you know, that have more of a history, it's like, man, they should have – that's just kind of the thing I think kind of hurts. Now, because you're a Raiders fan, now granted, maybe they were thinking that they had more of a fan base that moves over with them to Vegas, and maybe that's kind of some thoughts too. But it feels like the fans are definitely getting the shaft here because, again, it just seems like, you know, they did everything right and still didn't matter what's going to happen. It's all about money. And, you know, it is what it is, too. So that's my two cents on that. I don't know if you guys wanted to comment on that.
I do.
As well, if you want to like
real
leave.
Quick.
So, yeah, go ahead.
I can't say the city of Oakland did everything they were supposed to do because they've been asking for a new stadium for over a decade, really. And you look at that Oakland Coliseum, you're talking about a place that has had sewage overruns in the clubhouse. You're talking about a place that has had pet problems where, you know, wild animals have gotten in multiple times in the clubhouse, where you have to game plan about whether or not you take a ball in the first and third quarter versus the second and fourth quarter because you don't want to kick off the infield. Like, those are legitimate reasons to not want
that's
to play
true.
In that stadium. So, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I hate that Oakland loses it because that fan base is so rabid and fantastic. But if you look at that stadium, especially compared to all the other stadiums and all the problems that stadium has had, you're like, okay, I can understand where you don't want to put $1 billion product in that stadium. That piece of it I do get, and I know people don't want to hear it, but that's legitimate. That stadium is awful.
Hmm. Okay. Anything you want to add to that, JQ, or should Robert,
well,
be done? You like, I'm done with it.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, but you got to understand both sides of it. Obviously, the NFL is trying to run a profitable business here, and that stadium is, first of all, is the only stadium in the NFL that still shares with the baseball team.
Yep.
And it still has the baseball dirt on the field. And so, I mean, that says a lot right there. We talked about the Golden State Warriors moving to downtown San Francisco. The city of Oakland obviously have a lot of problems. Obviously, the school system is demoralized as well. So they have a lot of things that the city needs to fix. And I'm sure they're not the only city that has these problems. But there's a lot of things that needs to be fixed in that city, and so they're just probably just not in a position to really help build the stadium. I think if they really wanted to make it work in California, they probably could have went to a suburb or something along those lines, kind of like what the 49ers did, going all the way down to Santa Clara, which
mm-hmm.
is close to San Jose. And, and you know, they could have possibly just changed the name to the Bay Area Raiders or something like that and moved to somewhere in the area. But obviously, it just wasn't going to work in Oakland. And when you got somebody that's going to give you $750 million toward a stadium, you really only need to come up with about $350 to $450 million of your own pocket, out of your own pocket, I'm sorry. And then also, you know, the NFL is going to contribute some money to a new stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, Las Vegas, obviously, you got the gambling concern, mm-hmm. obviously, in Las Vegas. But it's the perfect place to hold big events. Because they have hotels out of the wazoo. So obviously it's a place where the NFL can really take advantage of it. And you know the NFL is probably going to reward them with a Super Bowl. And so we know that's just a matter of time. That's what they do when cities build new stadiums for them. The NFL will reward them.
Mm-hmm. 30 seconds.
But it is unfortunate for the fans, though.
Yeah, 30 seconds, and we'll talk about my fact. What's the show for the fact, too? Go ahead. 30-second drop. End it.
Next week, Wednesday night's good for y'all fellas?
Sure. That should work for me.
Wednesday night, that's what it is, people. We're going to be back on the air. We recap the national championship game in college basketball, getting ready for the NBA playoffs, and also the NFL draft will be on Wednesday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for our friends in California, and, of course, for our friends in Hawaii, that'll be 5 p.m. Hawaiian time. Aloha. Tune in on next week. Click on the same link to listen to the OT portion. We still got a lot of sports, and you definitely want to hear our Final Four coverage.
Absolutely. Go Chargers. Sorry, San Diego, but I just love it. Go Chargers.
Los Angeles. So, you know, every time I see the LAC, I'm thinking it's Los Angeles Clippers.
It's Clippers, right, yeah. It's hard. They got,
I got to get
they
used to those LAC.
Yeah.
I agree.
Do the fantasy shout-outs, Rob. We missed that because we were talking too much. That was on me, but go ahead.
Fantasy shout-outs. Last week in the semifinals, my co-host JQ beat his opponent Naptown Unibrow 6-2. I also beat my opponent 6-2. And also in the consolation round, you had Pastor Rock beat his opponent 6-2, one of the biggest wins of the week. In the final this week, at up-to-date scores, my co-host JQ has a lead on me, 5-3 in the championship week. It's been nip and tuck. And obviously my team's got to pick it up and see if we can win this championship this week. But JQ's team's up on me 5-3. That's an up-to-minute update on the fantasy basketball. JQ and I did a bracket challenge, so it looked like I had that one. I won that one, so I got to try to sweep this week.
Yeah. My bracket, Kansas blew it for me. Kansas totally blew it for me. Thanks, Kansas, Bill Self. But yeah, the fantasy basketball is, honest to goodness, and just to bring up the point that Rob didn't mention, just for us as a broadcasting crew, in four leagues, we're guaranteed, no matter which one of us wins, to win three of the four titles of the four leagues between football and basketball. So anybody listening to us, understand that we aren't just shooting from the hip without doing any research and just saying anything crazy to get clicks and whatnot. We know what we're talking about, and it's translating over to our fantasy teams as well. And the matchup we're having this week is just ridiculous. That score has changed literally probably about 15 times since we've gotten on the air here at 11 o'clock Eastern.
Yes.
So that's how ridiculous it is between us this week. It's really close in all but three of the categories. We play eight. Three of the categories are pretty much decided one way or the other for me and Rob. But the other five are totally up for grabs. I take no kind of victory lap about anything that he just said about me winning, because in the next 5 minutes it'll probably be 4-4 and we'll be tied again. So, you know, I take my hat off to Rob. He's been the front runner, deservedly so, for the past really 2.5-3 months. And I'm just trying to do my best to knock him off, but he's making it incredibly hard. So you guys listening, go to the page and we'll probably put it out there on Facebook on our thing so you can follow it over the weekend, because it's actually really, really fun to follow if you're listening to us and trying to measure what we say to what we put into our fantasy teams, because it's a fantastic showdown, and we won't know until probably this time on Sunday who's going to win.
Yep. And JQ's team is loaded, too, so it's going to take everything for me to win it
here
this
we go.
Week, too.
This dude has James Harden, Wall, and Draymond Green. He's talking about my team is loaded.
Yeah, Boogie Cousins. Devin Booker.
He's trying hard.
Yeah, he's trying to sell it. He his squad is trash. Like, he's got a good
thing. He's trying to be like Lou Holtz over there. How are we going to win?
Yeah, no.
Obviously, we both have good teams in order to get to this point. And, you know, so that's the key. That's what's making it fun.
It's been fun. That's the thing about it. It's been fun. And again, I want to win. He wants to win. But as long as we both play and both all our players play, we don't have the dreaded, you know, NBA rest schedule that's affected both of us really this week. You know, if you go full strength and you lose, you just tip your cap to them and say, hey, like you said, we were 1-2 for the most part of the season. It is what it is. Let the best man win, and, you know, let the chips fall where they may. But it's been fun. I don't know what I'm going to do next week when I don't have something to obsess about. It's going to be really hard. where I'm not checking two scores like daily. Like, it's going to be a
headache. We'll get rest up until football fantasy comes around.
There you go.
We got about 10 minutes here. I definitely want to get into the Final Four stuff, too, because NCAA is right around the corner here, and we'll talk about other stuff, too. But I really want to talk about, you know, the Final Four. There's an interesting fact, and I know that you guys are talking junk about me earlier. We got the Final Four set. We got South Carolina and Gonzaga, North Carolina and Oregon. And there's an interesting fact because we talked about the NIT, and I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but it's interesting because the NIT was originally more prestigious at the time. And this was, back in 1938, whatever. But it was. This is an interesting fact. The interesting fact was, I guess, that there's a fact in there, too, that it talked about Oregon, their last title. You know what their last title was, believe it or not?
1939,
yep. That was their last title.
There you go.
So that was literally a year after the NCAA tournament had started, too. They actually, guess who they beat? You're going to hate to hear this, JQ.
Yeah, they beat UC, I believe, or Ohio State, one of the two.
They beat Ohio State. Ohio State was who they beat, man. So that was their first championship. Believe it or not, was in 1939. That's a good call, Rob, on that point, too. So there was an interesting fact that it brought Cincinnati in there. I think they were the lowest team. There's some type of tie with South Carolina, and I wrote this fact down, and I think I got distracted. But I think the Cincinnati team in 1992 was like something about them was a Lotus Seed or something like that. They made it that far to the Final Four at the time.
Yep.
That great team.
Stand next to him, Bob Huggins.
Man.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Huggins. And there's two other guards. I'm losing their names right now, too. But it was interesting how
they had also
that kind
Corey
of
Blunt
yeah.
and
Corey Blunt.
Yeah, they had
and,
a good team.
Oh, my gosh. That was a great squad. And Nick Van Exel like owned like Penny Hardaway at the time, and I never forget that because he was at Memphis, and I was cracking up about that too. But anyway, there were some interesting facts about it too. I'm not going to spend a lot of time with that too, but it was just interesting. I was watching, and no, you can probably care less because I was excited to see my boys sort of do something, but you know they lost. But it was kind of interesting to hear the facts they had about that. So anyway, I digress. Let's move on. We got about 8 minutes here. I want to talk about some other stuff too. Rob, you're talking about some NFL teams here that have better throwback uniforms than the current uniforms. I guess you can kind of spit that out, and I want to talk about Westbrook and his triple doubles and all that fun stuff too. So go ahead, man, with that, Rob. That's five uniforms here. Go ahead, throwback uniforms, man. What you got for me? Why did I drop? You guys still on?
Yeah, I'm still here. You, Rob, you still there?
Rob must have dropped. Look, he dropped. Oh man.
Oh no.
I've got
five that I've got, and of course I'm going with the Chargers, the powder blue. Got to go with the powder blue as always. And I'm one of those crazy people that like the crazy loud uniforms. So I know it's no longer in Houston, but the Titans with the Oilers, also with that baby blue. I love that with the oiler on the helmet. It was awesome. I love the Bucks with the creamsicle as well.
I hate
and
the
then,
creamsicle. That's crazy.
I love the creamsicle, man. The creamsicle. I had one. I had a Trent Dilfer jersey, bro.
Oh,
I had one.
My God.
The white okay. creamsicle. And then the Rams with the blue and the blue and the yellow with the Ram on the helmet. Just awesome. And one that flies under the radar for me coming in at number five is I like those eagle ones. The green with the gray eagle on the side of it, and just that plain green with the gray on it. I love those. Seeing Reggie White and those boys come out in there with those on, I loved it. Those were my five when I think about it, and I was trying to go through my mind of who had the best throwback unis, and I would love if they would use them more often. But yeah, love those as well. I love those, all of them.
Gotcha. That's interesting because I go back. I was a Dolphin fan when I was growing up too, man. So I love the old school Dolphin uniforms, man. Something about the Dolphins was like that was just cool to me, man. Again, not a Patriots fan, especially not now. But those old like the old Patriots were kind of cool looking with the red. I thought those were pretty cool. There's a couple of the. I'm not gonna go back too far to the creamsicle, man, because I thought those were pretty ugly, man. But it was. I mean,
I love
them. They were unique. They were unique. I mean, I'll give you that. They were unique. I love the powder blue, too. I love the Rams as well. And those are kind of the ones that I can kind of think, you know, that I'm thinking in the back of my head that I just remember looking kind of sharp. I really wanted to give, like, an honorable mention to the Eagles, like you said, and also to the Seattle Seahawks. I don't know. What about the old school uniforms? I'd like the blue for some reason. I thought that was kind of cool as well. But like I said, not that I was a fan, but I just remember, like, oh, those are cool uniforms, you know. I remember Steve Largent from there.
Yeah.
I liked our old black uniforms too, but there's a couple squads you're like, eh, you know, I can kind of pass on that too. So,
those Falcons black ones were nice though. Yeah. That's a real quiet. Anytime you get a team with a red base one or a black base one where it's just simple with the black and white or black and red, those are always hard. Mm-hmm. And it goes from coast to coast. It's just one of those colors. It's like the Reds, where you see a lot of people who've never been to Cincinnati and aren't Reds fans always have a Reds hat on. You ever notice that, like a red and white one or a
mm-hmm.
black and red one?
Because mm-hmm.
it goes with everything. And it's, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Those old school Falcons ones were really nice too. I'm mad that I didn't put that on my list because those were really nice. I do like those.
Yeah, and like I said, we'll go with the ones that we hate. Maybe we'll tell Rod the ones that we hate the most because I'm going to probably go number one with the Steelers. And those are ugly uniforms. But the ones that I actually you know, and the Packers were like, ugh. But like I said, you know, those are the ones that, I mean, there's certain, you know, the Raiders have been pretty consistent, you know, through whatever. And I think the Cowboys have been pretty consistent as well as far as teams.
Mm-hmm.
Kept, you know, the Packers, certain squads, you know, they don't really change as much as well. And we'll talk about the crazy combinations for the Christmas games or for the Thursday night games too. So we'll get into that too. We got about 4 minutes here. Rob can't join us on, so we apologize for that too. But we're having fun with this too. So I guess from this prediction, do you want to talk? I'm going to leave the floor up to you, man. There's a lot of things we can discuss. And I'm going to leave it up to you, man. You can talk about Russell Westbrook. We can talk about Cousins. Or we can talk about Final Four. So it's kind of your call, man.
Well, we can do a rapid fire because I don't think those ones that we had to spend a lot of time on. You know, DeMarcus basically, it's a good tie-in, channeling his Russell Westbrook with his, you know, asking, repeating the same answer to the question. But I don't think it takes a genius really, right, to understand that he's playing Sacramento. That's the team the only team he's known until he went to New Orleans. He's definitely going to have a chip on his shoulder. And since he's on my team and I'm playing Rob this week, I expect him to have a monster game. I mean, I think he's just going to go plumb crazy. And we talk about Russell Westbrook. I mean, people talk about him chasing it, and sometimes he does chase the triple-double where his bigs have talked about, you know, they clear the way out of the way for him to get a rebound, to get that eighth, ninth, tenth rebound to get the triple-double. But the larger scope of that is, in order for them to have a chance and they clinch the playoff spot, he has to play that kind of way because he doesn't have the supporting cast that these other guys have. So he's got to do that.
Congrats.
So I'm really not upset mm-hmm. with him about that at all. And, you know, I don't know if you want to jump in here before I do. My final four picks, but I think North Carolina beats Oregon. I think North Carolina beats Oregon, and I think that Gonzaga finds a way to beat South Carolina. I think that sometimes, you know, the slipper just runs out on you, South Carolina's best player is kind of banged up. And I just think think it's one of those redemption tours, kind of like how we saw Cleveland come back after having the heartbreak of losing to Golden State and then coming back from 3-1 to win last year to kind of redeem themselves. I kind of feel like that's going to happen for North Carolina this year, where they get back to the championship game and then win it based off of the craziness that happened to them last year.
Gotcha. That's a good call. I mean, like I said, I kind of agree with you both ways. I'm not going to like throw North Carolina that just yet, man, because I think that Gonzaga, they've always been there, and I think they're going to pull some out too. But like I said, it could could work, man. I mean, I haven't been able to watch a lot of college basketball this season, man, because I've been so crazy, but – you know, from watching the tournament, and it's been definitely, like you said, the slipper does eventually run out. South Carolina, it's been a great run. And who predicted that both Carolinas in this, man? It's crazy, man. So,
right.
You know,
and
it's
the South
one
Carolina
of those good
women.
Matchups, too. Yeah.
That's crazy.
A good call, too.
You know,
yep.
the South
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
they both made
mm-hmm.
the Final Four, and that's insane. I think the last time I think that happened was UConn,
mm-hmm.
where they both got
mm-hmm.
the teams into the Final Four. So you don't think about South Carolina being this basketball juggernaut, so to speak, you know what I mean? But then you look up and both
mm-hmm.
of their teams, and you can't even put a number on the recruiting, you know, uptick that's going to give them where they say, you know what, we both made the Final Four, and nobody talks about South Carolina, but both our teams made it. Why not us when you want to come here and show your worth to the NBA and to the rest of the basketball world? So South Carolina's
yeah,
a good
yeah.
story just all around in basketball, women's and men's.
Yeah, they're not a good brand, I would say, too, if you want to really put
mm-hmm.
it out there, like a North Carolina or like a Gonzaga, if you will. But, yeah, or Oregon even, so all good. All right, let's wrap the show up. Got a minute here, as always. Rob normally does this, too. So do you want to take a JQ or do you want me to take this, man?
I'll do it. I'd say, you know, thank you, everybody, for tuning in and downloading the podcast. We truly appreciate all the clicks and the listens. You know, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. You know, we're going to go more into the NFL draft. We're going to have opening day coming in for baseball. We're going to talk about the NCAA tournament wrapping up. So we've got a little hodgepodge of sports here while we can still hold on to it. I don't know if we'll get into any Masters talk. We may hear in a couple of weeks as things kind of die down. But once again, we appreciate you guys. You know, without you guys, we can't get out here and do this call and spread this gospel that we love to talk about every week. And I invite you truly to follow me and Rob's fantasy basketball championship, because I think it's worth it. You know, don't be obsessive like I am, but understand that it's a really good championship game that we're having, and we appreciate you guys, you know, the utmost, and we holler at you next week.
Peace out. I'm following that too, man. It's been pretty fun to see you guys been battling out too, man. I love it, man. Back and forth, man. Good deal. So Rob really wants it really badly too, man. So that's the thing that I think is hilarious, man. So he wants it, and you're both fighting for it, man, because he's got to win one. I mean, I kind of lax like I got one, but that's all good. Next year, it's all good. We'll talk to you guys. See you same time, same channel, next Wednesday night. Good night, people.
Yes, sir. Talk to you later.